Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
So, this Friday night, right, is Halloween. Turn this off, okay? As I'm sure many of you are aware. I read the other day, I was reading an article on Facebook or somewhere on the computer, that Halloween is the second largest commercial holiday right behind Christmas, which kind of surprised me, but I guess it shouldn't have, because most adults who grew up in this country, in the U.S., I know some of you did not, grew up with Halloween, right? How many people grew up with Halloween costumes, the whole things? Most of us did. And it always had all the necessary components for a good time. It had scary stories and strange costumes and huge amounts of sugar and chocolate, two of the main food groups. You know, for me, that was heaven. Plus, being Catholic, it was actually a big holiday where we didn't have to go to church, you know, instead of all the other ones. So that one I kind of liked as a kid. When I was growing up as a child in the 50s, I can remember all the different bunch of the different costumes I wore that went through the whole range of heroes at the time. I did Superman one year. Anybody do that one? Okay. Batman wasn't that big a deal back then for some reason until the movies came out. Davy Crockett, that was a big one. And my own personal favorite, Zorro, the original, remember, with the mask and the whole thing. Everybody remember that? Okay. It was kind of a different world back then. It really was. There wasn't nearly as much fear, actual fear, in the bigger world swirling around. We didn't have Ebola and ISIS and terrorists and all this stuff that's really scary that we see right now. We could go anywhere in my neighborhood. I grew up in Florida, and be safe. We could take candy from anybody and not worry about it. Nobody who was out trick-or-treating wanted their parents to go with them, you know, unless you were a real little kid, and frequently I had to take my little brothers out with me. When we found a house that had really good stuff, like peanut M&Ms, always thought those were great, you know. We'd tell all our friends, hey, they got them down there, and they'd go down there, and they'd get all the good stuff, too. And those few houses where the mean people lived, the ones who wouldn't turn on their light and wouldn't answer the door, actually, we didn't toilet paper their house, we didn't blow up their car or do anything like that. You know, the whole attitude was different back then. We just left them alone. Anyway, as I sort of hearkened back to those good old days, it occurred to me that this whole process of trick-or-treating is kind of an interesting metaphor for life, because we'd hide behind these elaborate masks or big elaborate costumes of superheroes or monsters or supernatural creatures who we believed were much more interesting and powerful than we were. Then we'd go up to the door of nice, generous people and beg them to give us what we wanted, hoping that we wouldn't go away empty-handed. And at the end of the evening, we'd take all the stuff, we'd empty out the bag, and we'd spread it all out, you know, and we'd count up all the stuff we accumulated, and we'd remember how many people we impressed or scared with our costumes, and we'd use those as indicators, those external things, as indicators of how successful the evening had been, okay, all external stuff. Now, as I thought about this for this talk, for this Halloween talk, there was something else about this whole process that seemed strangely familiar. And I couldn't figure out what it was, but I thought about it for a bit, and finally, it hit me. If you think about it, we have gone through this same routine lots of times in our adult life, too. Putting on costumes and begging for goodies, and we may even be doing it now on occasion, and I don't mean at Halloween parties. For example, I remember going to job interviews about 30 years ago. I know some of you are even going through job interviews now. I'd put on my gray three-piece suit with the vest, red power tie, white shirt, black wingtips, okay? And then I would take my slightly exaggerated resume and I would hand it to somebody who I hoped would offer me a job that I wasn't sure I really wanted. Okay, does that sound like a familiar process? Other times our costume wasn't a uniform or an outfit. It was an attitude that we were wearing. I remember one time in college, I think it was high school or college, I was sitting around with all the other macho guys, you know, in their teens or whatever, you know, full of testosterone, all talking about sports and this team and that team, and I'd nod and pretend I was interested, and I didn't have the nerve to tell them that I really didn't like basketball or baseball. Wasn't interested at all, okay? But that was the mask that I was wearing. But the best example at all of grown-up trick-or-treating has to be the dating game, okay? Now, it's been a while since I played, and I know for some of you the same thing, but I doubt if it's changed much considering what I hear from some of my single friends. You can go to any bar, or nowadays you can go to Starbucks, basically the same thing. Everybody wears a costume and a mask, though we call it fashion and makeup, same kind of stuff, and everybody tries to say the right things and to laugh at all the right jokes and to be cool, but not too cool. Everybody wants to be the person that everybody else wants to be with. That's who everybody's trying to be. Now, these are all different social games that we play, just like little kids on Halloween, and we do it for the same reasons. We do it so we can get other people to give us things we don't think we could get if they saw us as who we really are. That's why we do it. And when we do this, whether we're trying to get a job or an evening of a romantic entertainment or a pack of M&Ms, whatever, the basic belief that we're stuck in is the same. And a lot of it was in the reading that Marilyn read earlier today from Stephanie Sorensen. You see, many of us grew up being told, either directly or indirectly, that we couldn't possibly be good enough the way we are to get the things we want in life. So we were taught that we have to pretend. We have to pretend. Society told us this. Our churches told us this. Our schools and teachers told us this. Even our parents and our family, with our best interest at heart, told us this same thing. And as a result, growing up, we were indoctrinated into believing that we can never be any better than what the world believes about us, about our status, whatever it happens to be. And that's at least part of the reason why so many people, including some of us, have such a difficult time connecting with each other. Because we are always acting. We are always acting. We are a world of strangers hiding behind a variety of masks, lying about who we are and what we want, still hoping to find one person in the world who will love us for who we are. That's true about a lot of people. We're trying to find the perfect job. We're trying to find the perfect friends. We're trying to find the perfect life. But we've been hiding our real self, hiding behind the mask for so long, we don't even recognize ourselves when we look in the mirror. And if it wasn't so sad, it'd be kind of funny. I mean, the truth is, we talk about this every week, here we are, each one of us, a completely unique individual expression of an unlimited power, full of love and with the potential to change the world, and we spend a major portion of our time and our energy hiding what we perceive to be our human weaknesses and flaws, like Patrick's cute little song, wondering why we feel so alone and separated from all the love and the joy and the success that we know that we've always wanted. And we do this because we have made the great mistake of believing, because we've been told so often by people we trusted, that who and what we are is determined by our past experiences, by our present circumstances, and the opinions of others, when the truth is we are none of those things. In fact, we are far greater than any of those things because we are, in every moment, life's desire to express itself in a greater way than ever before. So that means that now, in this present moment, we have the power within us to be more than we have ever been, no matter what anyone else in the world believes about us, including ourselves. But if we can't convince ourselves of this, if we can't get past the stories we've been told and start to believe this for ourselves, it's never going to happen. Not because it can't, but because we won't let it. And that's scarier than any ghost story you're ever going to hear. Now, the poet E.E. Cummings had a wonderful quote here. I love this. You know the guy who's spelled his letter with all lowercase things? I remember that from high school, okay? This is the quote. He says, "To be nobody but yourself, in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you like everybody else, means to fight the hardest battle which any human can fight." And then he says, "Never stop fighting." Let me read that again. "To be nobody but yourself, in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you like everybody else, means to fight the hardest battle that any human can fight. Never stop fighting." Now, what I like the most about that quote is the recognition that the world is constantly trying to mold us into its own beliefs, into its own fears and limitations and mediocrity. It is all the time. And if we're simply aware of this, you don't have to do any more than be aware of it, at least initially. That will help us keep us from falling into the trap. But to keep from becoming what the world expects us to be, we have to first be clear about who and what we are. We have to know that. We have to believe in our own spiritual magnificence. That's sort of the byline for Centers for Spiritual Living. And as we go through the process every day of day-to-day living, doing all the stuff we do, taking out the garbage, going to work, whatever it is, as we go through day-to-day, trying with all of the garbage and the nonsense that the world keeps throwing at us, we have to continually embody that belief in our own spiritual magnificence with complete honesty and integrity. And when I say integrity, Eric Fromm, the psychologist, had a definition of integrity. He said integrity simply means a willingness not to violate our identity. All right, to be true to who we are is what he's saying, all right? Now, the challenge, of course, is to be able to tell who we really are behind the assortment of masks that we have so painstakingly created over the years. I mean, some people I know have more different characters than Robin Williams and Jim Carrey tied together, okay? They may be their one person when they're with their family and friends. They're another person when they're at work. They're another person when they're with strangers, and on and on and on. So a lot of us, we don't change. We just change masks. Some people even wear a mask when they're alone so they don't have to face up to who they really are. Okay, I think a lot of people do that. The problem is we trust our own mask so much that we lose confidence in who we are. We feel like we can't go out without the mask, just like some people can't go out without makeup. And when we do that, we lose confidence in our inner reality, okay? We lose touch with our deepest spiritual values. So what happens is we end up focusing all of our attention on the world around us, trying to determine if our mask is working. And even if we get really good at it, like we're wearing the mask and everybody thinks I'm this, deep down we have, like Patrick was singing in the song, we don't feel like we're being who we are, okay? It causes us to become even more alienated from the only thing that can save us, which is self-awareness. You see, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. If our world is a reflection of what we are putting out, as Marilyn read, as we talk about every week, then the question we should be asking ourselves is, how do we like that reflection? Okay? Is our reflection, i.e. our life, consistent with the kind of person that we believe we are, or does our reflection change with the kind of costume or mask that we're hiding behind? Now, I know it's wonderful to be able to look around and see nothing in your life but beautiful people and fame and fortune and great material wealth. Most people believe that's not a bad mask. That's not a bad place to be. But if what you see is not a reflection of you, all right, it may be a reflection of what you think the world wants you to be. And that'll affect how much you're enjoying your life on a day-to-day basis. Let me tell you a story. This is a true story, ongoing right now. My wife and I sponsor a child in Cambodia, all right, through an amazing organization called the Cambodian Children's Fund. You may not know this because I haven't put it in the newsletter or anything, but anyway. His name is Siv Poa. He is 8 years old, beautiful child. And the reason we're doing this is because a good friend of ours got involved in this organization a few years ago. She lives in Hong Kong, and then she got us involved. And today is her birthday. Cammy, are you listening? She'll be listening to the talk later. So anyway. Now, this organization, the Cambodian Children's Fund, was started by a man named Scott Neeson. I don't think anybody here knows that name, all right? He was an Australian who was born in Scotland. When he was 5 years old, his parents moved to Australia. He never even finished high school. He lived in a blue-collar town. But he got into the movie business just locally and started expanding and growing. And eventually, he spent a 26-year career in the movie business. In the United States, he moved in. He was president of 20th Century Fox International, and he oversaw the release and marketing of a few small names, movies you may not have heard of, like Braveheart and Titanic and Star Wars and the X-Men and a few others, okay? Now, in 2003, he was starting to feel a little restless with his life. He had the full playboy lifestyle. He wasn't married. He had a yacht, a jet, and a Porsche. Okay? Sounds like pretty good reflection, okay, of reality. But he wanted to go to some of the places in Asia that were starting to resonate with him spiritually. He had started meditating, and he was going to Angkor Wat. Everyone familiar with that? The place in Cambodia where the beautiful temples are. And as he came into Phnom Penh, which is not that far away, a Cambodian friend who knew him well brought him over to see the most notorious garbage dump in Cambodia. He wanted him to see it because many adults, but also several thousand children, worked every day, some of these children as young as 3 or 4 years old, picking their way through the foulest smelling garbage. This place was like a mile across and 20 feet deep. And these children would be crawling across this garbage because they were light so they could move, and they'd try to pull out plastic and metal that they could sell to the recyclers so they could help feed and support their families. Some of them were orphans. None of them went to school, all right, because there were no schools. Anyway, Scott Neeson saw that, went to Angkor Wat, went back to his home in Beverly Hills or Bel Air, wherever he was living, unable to forget what he had seen. And one day, not too long after, he got an angry phone call from an actor and the actor's agent. Both of them were on the phone, and they were screaming at him, absolutely irate, that the right kind of food was not on the private jet that they had sent to pick him up to come to see his movie. And the actor said on the phone, "My life wasn't meant to be this difficult." Okay? That day, he quit. Scott Neeson quit, walked away. Okay? He moved to Cambodia, and he started to raise money, sold everything he had, and started building schools near the dump and staffing them with teachers. And he started because he wanted to help at least 45 kids. That was his plan. And right now, today, he started this in 2003, about 10, 11 years ago. His intention is for every child and their family to have food and full medical coverage, and for every child to have a uniform and to attend school. And he has set that up. Today, the organization serves over 2,000 children and their families. Okay? Now, it's a beautiful story. Go online. If you're interested, talk to me afterwards. I think we pay $150 a month, and that takes care of this child and his family. It's a great program, and this is not a paid advertisement, okay? I'm here to tell you. Now, in an interview recently, he said, among other wonderful things, he's an amazing man, "I truly believe I have found where I am meant to be." Isn't that great to be able to say that in your life? That's sort of what I mean when I talk about finding your authentic self. Not doing what he did necessarily, because that was pretty dramatic, but doing whatever you need to do to become the person you really are. You really are. A man by the name of Christian Geller once said, I love this, he said, "Live as you will wish to have lived when you are dying." Live as you will wish to have lived when you are dying. When we are getting ready to leave this plane of existence, all right, there will be no doubt in our mind what was most important in our life, whether we actually did it or not, okay? In 2001, the people who made phone calls from the World Trade Center after the planes hit but before the buildings came down, they didn't call their broker. They didn't call to yell at somebody and complain. They didn't call somebody who owned them money. They didn't call to brag about their big bonus in their corner office, though the day before, that may have been all they talked about. That may have been the mask that they wore on a regular basis. But when push came to shove, when things were getting real, they threw away the mask and called the people they cared about and told them that they loved them. It was really that simple. Now, recently the Nobel Prizes were awarded. Some of you may keep track of that. I kind of like to. They've got the prizes. The Peace Prize is what everybody focuses on, but there's physics, medicine, economics, and literature. And a lot of people know about the awards, but they don't know about the man for whom they are named, Alfred Nobel. He lived in the end of the 1800s, late 1800s. He was a Swedish scientist who became very wealthy and successful by discovering dynamite and then manufacturing it and distributing it to both sides in a number of different European wars so people could blow each other up. The First Crimean War, he was big in that, made a lot of money, all right? Anyway, one day his brother, he had several brothers, but one of his brothers who he worked with died, and a French newspaper, he was living in Paris at the time, made a mistake and printed his obituary instead. You know, they've always got obituaries ready for whenever somebody famous goes, and communication and no internet or stuff, so they figured, oh, that's who died. And they referred to him, the title of the article was, "The Merchant of Death is Dead." And when he read that, a funny thing happened. When he saw himself as the mask that the world called him or saw as him, it changed his life. So he sold his businesses and he established the Nobel Awards with about $1.5 million that he had at the time, which is the equivalent today of $3 billion with a B, okay? And when he died a few years later, at his funeral, he was praised by a lot of great people who came as one of the greatest humanitarians and visionaries of peace who ever lived. He threw away the mask. We are all capable of being brilliant and passionate and powerful beings. We actually have the ability to heal ourselves of any pain that we feel, not just physical, but emotional, spiritual, mental, all of these, and to heal everyone around us just by being who we are. Authenticity, okay? That's what Jesus did. That's what the Buddha did. That's what all the famous healers throughout history did. But for some strange reason, we seem to want to hide. We continue to hide behind these masks that show us to be less than what we are. And even worse, we are fooled by our own masks. So many of us are caught up in the illusion that we are our job or we are our physical characteristics, our body, or that we are our bank account. And if you don't believe me, listen to some of the things, a lot of the things that most people talk about at work or out at the coffee shops or whatever it happens to be. They talk about money, they talk about work, they talk about politics right now, a lot of that going on here in the state of Georgia over the next couple weeks. So we don't communicate with other people as much as we position ourselves. We position ourselves. I mean, think how the world might change if we were able to tell anyone and everyone who we really are without being worried about what they might think of us. If we could tell anyone what we really believed in. If we could talk about what we're afraid of and talk about what we love. If we could talk about our dreams and our ideas, and if we could talk about the kind of a world that we want to create for our children instead of the one we're creating now. And I don't just mean you and me and the people on the street. What about the world leaders? If they could talk that way among each other, like the Dalai Lama does, all right? You got to love that guy. He's honest. He's authentic. He's right up front. Why haven't we learned how to talk to each other about these things? Why do we continue to greet ourselves, to greet each other, wearing masks like a Japanese kabuki theater that have these big smiles on them when the faces behind the mask are so often angry and lonely and afraid? One of my favorite philosophers, the psychologist William James, he wrote this about the importance of discovering who we are. He says, "Seek out that particular mental attitude that makes you feel most deeply and vitally alive, along with which comes the inner voice that says, 'This is the real me,' and when you have found that attitude, follow it." Follow it. Very simple. Never stop fighting. Follow it. Okay? Those two. Take those two quotes together. What he's talking about is this wonderful balance that we have between the realization that we are all one at the level of God, but we are all also unique individual expressions of God. Okay? So it's that combination of oneness and diversity, that tension between those two, okay, and our ability to think and create and choose that makes us so powerful. That's what makes us so powerful. We need to understand that a lot of the problems in the world are caused by people who are unable to see or who refuse to accept who they really are. By people who have not learned to recognize the divine presence that exists in their own heart. People who are cruel, for example, are usually people who, for some reason, have come to believe that they themselves are weak. All right, so they're compensating for that. Their cruelty is a mask they use to keep themselves and the world from seeing their weakness. That's what it is. People who hate are people who don't believe that they deserve love. They really, really are. And their hate is a mask to keep themselves from admitting and the world from seeing how unlovable they are. That's where it comes from. Now, the sad thing is, for all of these people, because they are one with the same God as you and I are, they are neither weak nor unlovable, but their belief or their fear makes it so for them. You get it? It makes it so for them. If their consciousness was transformed, which it definitely could be, all right, they would begin to see that the greatest power in the world always belongs to those who are kind. And the greatest love always comes to those who give love unconditionally. All these ideas we talk about, ideas like love and kindness and peace and joy and harmony, all those different things, are all qualities that we share at our core, behind the mask. They are a part of what we truly are. That's why the masks we wear just get in the way. It's time we stop hiding behind these false excuses we have for why we are not living the life that we want to live. And it's also time we stopped buying into the illusion of why we're not doing the things that we want to do. Every mask that we wear hides us from our true self, from our divine self. One mask you may wear shows the world how old you are and what that age allows you to do and what it won't allow you to do. Throw that mask away. One mask shows the world your education and your job qualifications. Throw it away. One mask shows the world what you're willing to settle for in a relationship. Throw it away. One mask shows what you think you're worth financially. Throw the mask away. And finally, throw away the mask called my story. My story, okay? Your story stops here. It's time to start writing a new one. It's time to start writing a new one. It is time that we stopped putting limits on ourselves, because that's all these masks are. They're self-imposed limitations. Any limit that we accept is a limit that we have chosen to accept. But any limit we accept for ourselves can only come from a world that believes in limitation. It can never come from God. There is no limitation in the mind of God. That's one very good reason to keep coming back to places like this and to be around people like you, people like me, people like, not just in Centers for Spiritual Living, but people who are spiritually grounded, whatever faith they have, all right? Coming back to places that remind us of who we really are, places that are filled with people who are willing to look behind the mask and appreciate us for everything that we are, simply by nature of being here. Because the only thing that really matters in the long run, The only thing is our desire to express love and life openly and honestly in our own particular way and our conscious decision to do just that. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right, let's just take a moment. Take a breath. A lot of ideas. Take the ones that resonated with you. I share them with you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. I am more than enough. I have within me all I need. I have around me all I desire. And this is because the universe is a creative process that has no limits. And I am a part of that process. I am the part of God that makes decisions. I am the part of God that chooses. I am the part of God that creates. I am the fingers of the hand of God. Not a power that is far off working through me, but a power that is in the world, made of itself as me. So I recognize with great honesty that I have created the life I am living. with all the good and some that may not be as good as I would like. And I recognize that this will not be changed by anyone else or by outside circumstances. It can only be changed by me, by the choices I make, by the decisions that I make, by my ability to recognize that everything around me can be molded and shaped, not arrogantly, but humbly, simply by recognizing it as God at work in the world and recognizing myself as the same. So as I do this, I create, not out of a sense of pressure, but out of a sense of joy. I create in my life great health by the choices I make. I create in my life prosperity and abundance to allow me to do the things I desire. I create in my life wonderful opportunities to do work that serves the world and serves me. And I create in my life the opportunity to give and receive love in great measure. This is who I am. This is what I am. This is what I do. There are no limitations on me except those that I impose upon myself. The world does not limit me. My circumstances do not limit me. What I see around me can never limit me. I am more. I am more than that. So knowing this, I give thanks. I give thanks for all I have been given and all that I have yet to give. I open my mind, open my eyes, and open my heart to see how I can participate in this beautiful world in a greater way, a place that not only makes the world a better place, but allows me to become the person I truly am. I do this with joy. I do this with thanksgiving. And I release this truth into consciousness, letting it be so from this moment forward. Please join me in saying, and so it is.